Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 67. More tribbles, more troubles, and the trouble with Edward.
I've been working with sample specimens from a species native to Iota Geminorum 4. Tribulus ventricosus. People call them tribbles for short.
Oh, pretty darn cute.
Yeah, and if you take all the fur off underneath, it's all meat. Like a scallop. Blood red.
You want to eat them?
I don't want to eat them. I was thinking of introducing them as a food source for the Kleshans. Although I have eaten one or two for research purposes. I fed one to Noel the other day and he enjoyed it. Noel is a foodie, but I'm no chef. The only problem with this particular species is that they breed very slowly, but with some genetic manipulation, I could speed up that process and we could make a ton of these.
Let me ask you, are they intelligent?
It's hard to say. As you can see, they don't have a face, but they're very slow moving, so they would be easy to hunt. Actually, one fell off my desk the other day and it just died instantly, so there's that. So even if they were intelligent, I feel like they would be very easy to capture and then eat.
No, I was more concerned with the moral implications.
For the triple? Well, sure. I could genetically manipulate the DNA to make them all brain damaged. And that way that would solve that.
Quinto Triticale. The Federation invested a lot of R&D dollars into Quinto Triticale. Because
what happened to the Quattro Triticale?
Hey, you know, you snooze, you lose.
Because
it's only got four lobes.
That was the only thing that could grow on Sherman's planet, and now Sherman's planet is having a famine.
And now they're getting Quinto Triticale.
So they got to use the Quattro failed, and now it's...
We can presume the Quinto Triticale has five lobes, which I don't even know if that's a thing you can do with plants. Can a plant have five lobes? Is that just insane? Is that sci-fi writing mad?
You can have five leaves, but yeah, as far as the... Well, you can have fruits, I guess, can be divided into...
Five lobes?
Five segments. Well, maybe not. I don't know.
Well, what we'll do is we'll, after we're done recording the...
An orange is at least five.
When we're done recording the podcast, we'll get a bunch of fruits and we'll do surgery. And then we'll report about it next week's podcast.
Yeah, that could be different.
In the meantime, welcome everybody to the show. The It's Got Star Trek podcast, I believe that's what we call it these days. It's Got Star Trek podcast. And this is a doubleheader, first of all. That's the first point to make. Doubleheader. That means, it doesn't mean we're doing two episodes of the podcast. It means we're talking about two shorter installments on this episode. So we are going to be talking about the more tribbles from the animated series, 1973. And we will also be discussing The Trouble with Edward, which is one of the short treks. And I'm going to go with the numbering convention that's on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, and on Memory Alpha, because I have no idea how to label these the short treks, and it was driving me mad.
Oh.
They call it Season 2
yeah.
of Short Treks, Episode 2.
Yeah, that's how Wikipedia has it the same way. Yeah.
There's a logic behind that, so I will accept that. It's just that the Short Treks kind of came out, you know.
Yeah.
Not irregularly, but it was just this, I don't know. It's just...
They base it on, like, these are the Short Treks that came out, like, during the first season of Discovery, and then, like, these are the Short Treks that came out between the second season of Discovery and Picard. I think that's what the that's the classification for season two.
And hopefully they'll do more. I haven't heard anything about them doing more. So I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, so that's what we're covering this week. Last week, if you're interested, we covered The Trouble with Tribbles, the original tale of Tribble Mania. And we decided to do 3 weeks of episodes. We did The Trouble of Tribbles. This week, we're doing these two shorter Tribble installments.
Because it's best if your Tribbles are little ones.
Yes, it is. And then next week, we'll do DS9's Trials and Tribulations to conclude Tribble Mania. Unfortunately, Dan isn't joining us tonight because he's on a secret mission. In the past, Jesse's been on secret missions.
I had one last year about this time. Yeah.
You know, we do get a lot of people writing in asking about our professional backgrounds. You know, people are interested. They listen to us sometimes for hours a day, strangely enough. And they wonder. They're like, what is it you guys do?
Dan works at the CIA.
Well, we all work for intelligence agencies, and the two out of three of us actually work for U.S. intelligence. We have a fun little game of cat and mouse, you know, sort of a professional respect for each other, but doing a bunch of spy shit all day is really stressful. So Star Trek is a great release, you know, watching Star Trek and going out and doing weird spy shit. So
you learn a lot from Star Trek that you can learn and you can use in your spy career. Mm-hmm. You know?
Especially from Garrick.
Yeah,
he's always always providing advice.
Sensors and stuff.
But Dan's not with us this week, but Jesse and I will power through and we'll get it done. So I guess the first thing to discuss will be the more Tribble, more Troubles. I wrote this down a million times and I kept writing it more Trouble, right, more Tribbles, and I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that because it's a follow up to Trouble with Tribbles, and so you think that it's going to be more Trouble, more Tribbles.
That makes sense. I can buy that. So,
and the script was written by the same guy that did the
other David episode. Gerald. David Gerald wrote this, and he wrote The Trouble with Tribbles.
And this was originally conceived for just a follow up TOS episode, mm-hmm. like for third season.
Yeah, apparently there was one of the producers refused because he hated The Trouble with Tribbles, so he wouldn't allow it during the third season. I can't remember which producer it was, but when the show was canceled. David Gerald, and they, well, not after the show was canceled, and then they started up the animated series. David Gerald apparently started haranguing Gene Roddenberry to say, I'm available. I would like to do one of these. Yeah. And kind of brought the story out. Although they did have to change it somewhat from the original conceit. Did you read, Jesse, what the original conceit was of the...
Oh, no, I didn't.
Apparently, the original idea was that they would, through some similar machinations, end up dealing with a Tribble predator, like whatever the natural predator of the Tribbles was, and that predator also replicates super fast, and that throughout the course of the episode, crew members would keep going missing, and it was going to be some like horrific. Basically, I don't even know how comedic it was going to be.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah.
But by all accounts, when...
That's not funny for the 70s.
Yeah, and David Gerald brought this, you know, to the writing room or whatever, and they realized quickly that it wouldn't work for a Saturday morning kids cartoon to have crew members being brutally murdered by some sort of a Tribble hunting creature.
But what I did read was that they used some scripts that were originally intended for TOS for the animated series. And in a lot of cases, they didn't have to cut out a lot. Things just played out quicker with the animation. So that's, you know, it still fit into the time slot that they had.
They could squeeze it in because, you know, TOS was arguably very good at drawing out the drama and letting scenes have time to breathe and things like that. So by cutting that out, you can get it down to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
A little over 20 minutes pretty easily.
It's just a couple of shots of some guys like moving a little bit and like you recycle a bunch of things. And
although I do believe that this episode came in short because it has an inexplicably long shot of the Enterprise at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right.
Before everything starts. And it could be...
And at the end.
And since this wasn't the original script, because I don't even think David Gerald ever got to the writing an original script for this. I think he had the concept and he had a treatment for it. But that could be the explanation, maybe, because it's a long shot of the Enterprise floating in space. And it's a cool shot, but I'm thinking, I'm like, they ran about 10 seconds short on this episode. So they're like, just pad it out at the beginning. Show them the Enterprise. These kids love the Enterprise. They'll eat that shit up.
There is one at the end too, though. There's like that. There's like some kind of triumphant music that sounds a little bit, a little bit non-Star Trek.
You're right. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Is it? Are they gonna like go back to like inside the ship and hey, this is what's going on? No, they're just gonna sit there.
I remember that. I was focused more on the music because the music is pretty hardcore in this episode.
Yeah.
The animated series in general, I think, was pretty good with the music.
There's a lot of really action-packed music.
Yes.
They use the same exact music over and over again, but I always thought it was really kind of cool and effective. And it,
agreed.
It gets in your head and you're kind of humming it.
They appeared to, you know, come up with some good compositions and some good variations on TOS music that they used. Usually, I mean, you're better at this than I am. I find that most of the time it's not recycled TOS music. It's a weird variation on the TOS music.
Yeah. Even
some of the standard like fight music and things like that. It's not exactly what was in TOS. Obviously, we all know that the opening theme song goes that strange direction. It's Star Trek from Bizarro Land.
The intervals are inverted, so it goes like down. Or yeah. Yeah, the melody all starts high and goes.
But the music is, they do repeat it a lot, and it is occasionally aggravating, particularly in such a small time frame. But because the music is awesome, it's, I think. Because
there's that one that's like, so. Like that one, they use that one a whole lot.
That
like,
one's used throughout the whole series.
Super action. Oh yeah, that one's cool too. But yeah, that's my other favorite.
It's a good arrangement because it can go on. I mean, it's good filmic music because it can be expanded or contracted according to the scene's needs, and it doesn't sound all weird necessarily.
Yeah, and I think the music has more of a 70s feel to it.
Got a bit of
it's more like, those like
Star Trek,
all those sort of like actiony shows and movies, cop shows and stuff that came out in the 70s, and they all have that kind of
running and jumping, sort of, sliding across the car hood.
Yeah, kind of like, it's like Superfly kind of music.
Super Kirk. Well, what did you think of this? You're familiar with the animated series. I'm sure you've seen this a few times already. It's the fifth animated series episode we've actually ended up covering.
Yeah.
If you go to itsgotstartrek.com, you can click on the animated series, and they will all be listed there, and you can check them out. In fact, the first one I recall being an especially fun podcast. I'm sure the second one is also good, but check out that first one. It's one of our older podcasts, but
it's part of our pilots series.
Yes, because when we started, and for those who don't know, who have only been listening to the recent stuff or Discovery or Picard or whatever, if you go way back in the library, we did we started the podcast by covering all the pilot episodes for all the Star Trek series, leading right into Picard. So you can go back and check some of those out. They're pretty good. I'm sure we're a little less polished, and the audio quality might be leave something to be desired.
Those are the classic episodes.
Absolutely classic. But what did you think of this episode? Being a connoisseur now of the animated series.
Well, there were some things that were funny, like, why do they have a famine, and what's the deal with this Quinto Triticale? But,
You've triggered an observation in me. You've triggered an observation, which is that three out of the four core Tribble stories are based around eradicating a famine. Mm-hmm. Because the first Trouble with Tribbles from TOS was going to Sherman's planet and planting the Quadro Triticale. This one is about the Quinto Triticale. And we're about to we'll talk in a little bit about the trouble with Edward. And that's also about solving a famine. So Tribbles should be associated in your mind with terrible famine and starvation, which makes sense because they are an ecological question. And it's interesting to see in the 60s and here in 1973 that, there is that implicit understanding that these are a problem for not just hilarious reasons, but because the Klingons talk about it, they're decimating the land, they're eating everything up.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
It continued with the idea that the Tribbles are funny, and then there's still a lot of comedy in this episode. There's the whole thing with there's like a Tribble in Kirk's seat, and he keeps moving it, and it keeps getting replaced by one that's even bigger.
Yeah,
until there's like one that's just so big, he's just like, I think I'd rather stand.
Yeah, Spock is being a total dick. He's like, wouldn't you prefer to sit down, Captain?
Yeah,
I think I'll stand. I like this episode. It's fun. It's a bit light.
It's light.
It's light. And I think compared to the previous four animated series, which were episodes, which all, you know, there's a goofiness to them because of the whole sort of Filmation style goofiness or whatever, but they are by and large really interesting sci-fi stories, you know, plenty to pick apart in there, but also some very interesting ideas and taking advantage of the transition to animation, which allowed them to do more crazy stuff like Beyond the Farthest Star with the big giant alien organic three billion year old ship,
all the crazy visual stuff that you could do.
This animation. One was,
this is just like it's just like a TOS episode that they drew.
There's less utilization of the big giant of the big giant. There's a big giant Tribble. I'm just thinking of a big giant Tribble now. But there is less use of the animation context in this particular episode.
And then we know that there's some kind of new weapon that Klingons are working on, but then it turns out to be just kind of lame. So that seemed like a little, I don't know, like they could have done something cooler. That seems kind of lazy.
There is a theme to this episode. And that theme is basically that often the solutions to problems create their own problems, right? Which in the context of a children's show, a Saturday morning children's show, I think it worked pretty great because it's not hitting the kids on the, it's not saying that to the kids. Kevin Kirk's not looking at the camera being like, sometimes the solutions are worse than the original problem. But in both the case of Cyrano Jones and the Klingons, they are both attempting to solve the problem of the Tribble from different angles. And neither of those solutions is particularly that works out particularly well in the end, right? But otherwise, you know, it's a bunch of callbacks and they're fun callbacks.
There's the thing at the end where there's like, oh, did you get that one? He's like, yeah, I got that one. And then it like opens up and a bunch of tribbles fall on him and it's like, wah, wah.
Yeah.
They look like fuzzy softballs. They're all like spherical and they have like these funny markings on them.
It is, I like that they revisited the tribbles and I overall enjoy this episode. The message is good.
A lot of TAS episodes are sort of callbacks to TOS episodes.
Yeah.
And well, with, you know, a lot of them.
There's some better than others. I think this is middle of the road in some sense. Not that it's not a great episode and it's totally worth watching, but it's a little reliant on the callbacks. And the concept of tribbles being like, okay, I made it so they don't replicate so much. That's what Cyrano Jones says. You know, he says, I'm mucking around with it, and now they won't replicate so fast, so don't worry about it. But then it turns out, oh, they just get bigger.
Right.
Which is funny.
They turn into some kind of like more like a tribble colony.
But that's the weird part, and in the animation covers it up because it's like the joke is now we have big, giant, fat tribbles. But then at the end it says, okay, they're actually colonies, and then they split apart.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, it's fine.
Do they even call them colonies at all until the end? Like, nope. Is that part? Yeah, and Bones says it's a colony, but that's the only time they ever say, this is what's going on.
You'd think it would look like a massive tribbles all like kind of clustered together, but obviously that wouldn't work with the plot because the plot relies on them all believing that to some extent they're like, oh, it appears they're not reproducing all over the place. The Klingon disruptor thing is interesting because I can't remember if it's the first time or not introducing this idea of the limitations of something, you know. So in this case, the Klingons have developed a weapon which is really cool in some ways, but takes up a lot of power and you have to recharge. The closest analogy I can think of is the idea, perhaps this is in the TOS with the Romulans where you can't shoot while you're cloaked. I can't remember if that was in the Romulan associated TOS episodes or not, but it's a similar concept, which again, for young people watching this, I think it makes sense. I think that's a cool message to kind of a reality of the world to get across. But the animation didn't do it any favors because it was just a bunch of circles. And
it was like almost like a black and white drawing of the warbird ship, the Klingon ship, bird of prey.
Yeah, the
warbird.
Or no, they those are like are those the D, they're like the D7s, I think. It was cool. They brought what was his name?
Cyrano Jones.
Yeah, Stanley Adams.
Remember when last week when Dan kept forgetting like what the guy's name was? Yeah. He was like that guy. he like had a couple different like alternate names. For him. I forget.
That's what we miss about. And Dan would be here. He would probably be continuing the tradition of the alternate names. But so Stanley Adams came back as Cyrano Jones, but he's the only guest star of note here because though we see Koloth and Korax again.
I think the show is mostly just Jimmy Doohan.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Doohan. James Doohan does the voices of them. And James Doohan is the go-to guy on this show to do the extra voices. So he's doing lots of voices throughout the animated series. You'll get to hear a lot of Jimmy Doohan's extra voice work, which is really a lot of it's very good. I mean, it adds to the character of the show. On the other hand, it is funny because his portrayal of Koloth is very different than that of William Campbell. William Campbell played him a little bit more kind of sprightly. Here he's a little bit more like Kirk.
Yeah.
Kirk. I want that man. Kirk. Right.
Yeah. It's like a lot of the other voices.
A lot of his voices are like, affirmative.
I read Error. That guy was in D-Day, and he got like shot like six times or something. He was in a Juno Beach because he was a Canadian.
Lost a finger.
Oh yeah, word.
We didn't mention it last week, but he was pretty good about hiding his missing finger during filming. But the trouble with Tribbles is one of the few episodes where you can actually, there are a couple shots where it's clear he's like holding a Tribble or something. He's holding something and you can clearly see that like a big chunk of, I think it's his ring finger is missing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Check that out.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to go through shot by shot, frame by frame, or just Google it. I think that's another alternative these days. So in the trouble with Tribbles, we see Scotty beam the Tribbles over to the Klingons, right? That's the big end gag of the trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah.
And then here, this is after that, right? Here we see that the infestation has clearly spread and started causing problems, for the Klingons. And Worf, and we'll discuss this more next week, but Worf later mentions that Tribbles were considered the mortal enemies of the Klingon Empire, presumably talking about this period of time. And as Worf puts it, he says that the Klingons hunted them down and it destroyed their homeworld and eradicated them from the universe, basically, by the end of the 23rd century.
Okay, that's why they never pop up again.
So it's fun that we are seeing the origin of that here, even though obviously they gave that to Worf because this stuff had already been produced. But it is very cool to see the origins of the Klingons battle. And that joke doesn't really get old, the concept of the super mega strong and violent and powerful Klingons being brought so low by a Tribble. Although the Klingons, I mean, they also recognize, they're like, this is a problem. These things are a problem. They're going to fuck everything up. Are you crazy? Why are you all petting them and thinking they're all cute?
So like they rescue Cyrano Jones. And they don't know who he is until they beam him on board. Mm. And they're like, wait a minute. Yeah. Wait, this guy looks familiar. And it's like, oh, it's Cyrano Jones. And it's like, I wonder how much time has passed between episodes. That's kind of silly. But they don't even, they're not like, and he's like, there's Cyrano Jones and he's got Tribbles, but they don't seem like that alarmed. They just seem like, this guy's annoying and we just rescued him.
Yeah.
But the bigger issue is these Klingons.
Well, and the Tribble is what should have, you're pointing out that they should be alarmed at the Tribble.
Like, yeah,
who cares about Cyrano Jones? Although,
right, exactly.
And we discussed this last week, but at the end of The Trouble with Tribble, Cyrano Jones was comically sentenced to cleaning up Tribbles on station K7 for 17 years. And we know this isn't 17 years later, right?
Right,
but
yeah.
As we mentioned on the previous podcast episode, of course they're not going to have a space station be out of commission for 17 years. Yeah. It didn't even make any sense. Whatever it was, he's off. Cyrano Jones got off space station K7 and is clearly back to his old shenanigans.
He tells him just some wild story that doesn't make any sense. Like, I was trying to sell Tribbles to the Klingons, and it's like, well, you didn't know it was a Klingon planet. He was, and he just like kind of dodges around it, and then you realize, well, okay, well, he stole something from him. He wasn't, they're after him because he stole the Glomar.
The Glomar.
Not because he, tried to mistakenly sell to Klingons. But even though, I guess back then, Klingons looked like humans. But still, it's a bullshit story.
It is a bullshit story, which, I mean, you could argue that's
for a minute, you're
Cyrano
like, what?
Jones is going to do.
Yeah, I mean, for a minute, you're like, what? But you're like, oh, of course. Yeah, that's just nonsense. He just made some shit up. But they don't seem to be like, I wonder what he's really up to.
I like the idea that they're you know, even in this early period, well, I guess that's relative, but they're talking about genetic manipulation, right? And it's an early theme going back to the origins of Star Trek, where they have an understanding of this concept and how it could be applied to sci-fi stories. And although here, you know, again, it's kind of Cyrano Jones's motivation in The Trouble of Tribbles was more understandable. He has some tribbles, even if we questioned how the business plan would work, given he must have known that they replicate so easily. So it's hard to like sell something that's going to replicate so easily unless you sell a bunch and then get the fuck out of there. But overall, the idea that he would be selling cute things to somebody makes sense. In this episode, it's like you said, it's you're doing.
He's a bit of an ecological terrorist.
Genetic engineering, basically, to make a product safer, but everyone's already like feeling shady about it. And then you're like, why you keep hanging around near Klingon space? Why you gotta be bothering like you're always hanging around near Sherman's planet?
You're like exactly the kind of guy that is gonna get into trouble with the Klingons. Like, we've seen this before. Like,
And, you know, of course, there are limitations to the, you know, due to the time that you have to tell the story on the animated series, as well as the context as a children's story. You're not going to go into too much detail necessarily about things. But, you know, as I said earlier, in other episodes, they've managed to convey some pretty high concept sci-fi ideas in a way that's totally works for children to watch. And TAS is what got me started on Star Trek as a kid, because they played it on
me too.
Nickelodeon all the time. I used to be terrified by Star Trek. I was like, it's creeping me the fuck out just seeing commercials for that shit. Forget if I was sick one day or whatever. For whatever reason, I ended up, you know, back in those days, kids, you had to like go up to the TV to change the channel.
Oh, man. Yeah, so sometimes you were just sitting right up on that TV.
Yeah, or other times if you were like in bed or sick or something, or sitting on the couch, you'd just be like, I don't want to watch this show, but fuck it.
There's nothing I can do about it.
I can't do anything about it. I'd have to get up and go turn the channel. Or honestly, probably in this case, it would have been, I would have to get up and go get the remote control, which parents of the previous generation, I think they're better about it these days. But in past generations, the generations that had remote controls, the parents had this inexplicable habit of insisting that the remote control be kept like on the TV.
Yeah.
Why would you keep it there?
Where to find it or something.
Yeah, but you can keep it anyway.
You could
next to the couch. It should be next to the couch on the end table or something.
Going up to the TV defeats the purpose of a remote control.
It is. It's a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah.
When you obtain that remote and walk back to the couch, it is a Pyrrhic victory, because you still had to walk next to that TV. But anyway, it got me into Star Trek because of those really cool ideas. And I know I loved this episode as a kid, but I wish there was a little bit more thought put into some of these motivations. The Klingons, I think, are written a little bit better. The Klingons, you know, it's more about they had this specific plan. I think one issue with the story is they add this Klingon weapon for seemingly no useful reason. Right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't add anything to the story that the Klingons have this particular special weapon. Yeah. What's really interesting is that the Klingons have genetically engineered this Tribble Hunter. And now we have them inventing two things in one episode that we're dealing with, which is it dilutes it a little bit. And particularly since the disruptor type weapon, whatever they called it, they didn't really have it where they just kept calling it the Klingon weapon, I guess. But it zaps the Enterprise. Doesn't seem to cause that much damage. They keep saying it's bad, but they're still flying around. It's not, you know, it's not like they're not dealing with too much of a problem as a result of this weapon.
A bunch of systems were like paralyzed, but not like, you know, life support or like, you know,
and not for that long.
not for that long either.
So
and then they could like the Enterprise came back, but then like the Klingon ship was still kind of like limping back.
Yeah, they were recharging. They were recharging the weapon. So I think it's a case of kind of tossing a little bit too much into a story that's already would need a little bit more space to tell some things better. On the other hand, I did like that, talking about callbacks, I like that Cyrano Jones, when he comes down to the ship, he starts talking about, like, you know, spiking flame gems.
Yeah, that's stuff. Right.
He's just up to the exact same tricks as before.
Because they keep letting him do it. You gotta throw that fool in the brig or, you know.
I can't
execute him in the future, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they would. I think in The Trouble with Tribbles, he was being threatened with being put to one of those penal colonies.
Yeah.
Which in the 60s is another thing that I think is kind of funny, this idea that the progressive 1960s style of punishment for criminals, they obviously don't want to put them to death and they don't want to put them in jail because that's cruel. And it is, but then they were like, penal colonies are the way to go. I'm not against the idea of penal colonies necessarily. I'm just saying it's kind of funny that was the Federation's all about penal colonies. I mean, Tom Paris is on a penal colony, I think, in New Zealand or something. And there are multiple episodes where the Enterprise has to show up, you know, TOS and others, where it's like, okay, we got to go to this penal colony, and then there's some shady shit going down at the penal colony.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, I think it was like solitary was considered a more progressive form of incarceration. It was like I might have my facts all screwed up, but I think it was like when the Quakers were building prisons, like Quakers built the prison that was in Philadelphia.
I think this is a primarily American thing. Maybe it existed elsewhere as well, where they were prisons where they could rotate, like all the cells were on like a central circular axis. Rotate it, and it was intended to be more secure because there's no door to open.
I remember hearing
about it. You know, there's like an opening in the walls, and then you rotate everything, rotate the whole unit, and that way the prisoners can't get out. There were two huge problems with this that made it go out of favor. One was when there were fires or something, they just all burned up.
Everybody's gone.
And the other was, I think, multiple prisoners were getting their hands chopped off because they were like hanging out at the bars or whatever. Yeah. And like the wall would start moving. Anyway, go have some fun. If you want to get real depressed, and you should, this is a good kind of depression. Go learn about the history of the penal system and what it's come to now. You might discover some terrible things that you don't want your tax money going to.
You will discover.
You will be. Anything else about this? I would say the one thing I wanted to call out was the ending tag is not as good as The Trouble with Tribbles.
No, it's not.
But it, you know,
it's a callback.
It's a callback, and there's I do like seeing Kirk covered in tribbles again, and I like the idea of a cute little joke at the end of the episode. The joke just sort of falls flat. I can't even remember what it was.
Oh, that was what I said before. It's best if all our tribbles are little ones.
Yes, yeah, that's right, yeah. So you even mentioned it and I couldn't remember it. It's not a memorable joke. It's definitely not comparable to Scotty saying, I gave them to the Klingons where there'll be no tribble at all. Right. Which is also a stupid joke, but it's a funny stupid
this
joke.
This is just a joke on that joke. Which of course, you know, you lose a generation of joke there and it just kind of isn't so cool.
Yeah. And The Trouble with Tribbles, of course, ends with Kirk with them all guffawing and then Kirk slapping Scotty on the belly.
Yeah, right.
Very bizarre and out of
you
character.
Son of a bitch.
A very out of character thing for Kirk to do. It's just slapping him, just rubbing Scotty's belly. But that all being said, that this is an inferior ending tag, I did like the sort of end shot of Kirk's smirk. Mm-hmm. He had like a funny little smirk. He's all covered in tribbles and he's like, and he's like, does that smirk with the eyebrow thing.
Yeah, there was a couple moments of that Kirk smirk and a whimsical Kirk eyebrow. And they get that through a lot in the animated series with Kirk's face, making faces. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I liked it when Koloth said something like, implement boarding plan B, and the guy's like, yes sir.
Yes sir. Yeah, the Korax voice again. James doing he was just trying to make two different sounding Klingon voices, and they were you could clearly tell them apart, but it was weird but fun. Anything else for more tribbles, more troubles? Or does that do it for that, that particular
might, that
entry?
Might do it.
Well, all right.
That might do it.
What we can do then is we'll move along home to the trouble with Edward. So we're fast forwarding many, many years into the future. So, and also into the past.
Or actually into the past.
We're doing both. So the More Tribbles, More Troubles aired on October 6th of 1973. The Trouble with Edward became available online on October 10th, 2019. And somebody out there with a math brain or a calculator can determine how many years are intervening.
Hmm.
Obviously a large
somebody
number of
years.
Somebody
who's not currently doing a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we're busy.
Because we're focused on that.
We're busy entertaining. Your mileage may vary. this, of course, comes very much later. However, it is a prequel in a sense. It retcons the idea that Tribbles were not, you know, it basically says Tribbles were not always fast producing, and that the plot, you know, that occurs as a result of the plot of this particular episode.
Yeah.
It was written by Graham Wagner, directed by Daniel Gray Longingo. I don't know why I can't say
Longino?
That.
Longino.
Could be Longino. It's got to be Longino.
That would make sense. It's maybe Portuguese. I don't know.
I don't know any. I don't know either of these people. But I will say that first of all, so this is one of the short treks. They were, you know, put out by CBS All Access, now Paramount Plus. I guess in sort of a new version of those old webisodes, you know, TV shows for a while were doing webisodes because they want to get people online looking at content and producing small amounts of content. This is an evolution of that. I'm a big fan of the short trek concept because there are a lot of stories you can tell in the Star Trek universe, but they don't all warrant an entire series or even an hour long, you know, 45 minute long episode. They're just shorter tales that you want to squeeze in and build out the universe.
Exactly. Yeah. You get little background bits.
The other thing that the short treks let you do is try really sort of bizarre concepts. Or, you know, push the limits a little bit into what's been done before, or take something that's been done before and evolve it in a direction that might be difficult to do. You know, the short treks, the one they did that was related to the Picard show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
That showed the Mars attacks. I mean, that's a largely...
It's sort of like an extended music video.
Yeah, there's almost no dialogue, but it's really kind of, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
They did that Ephraim and Dot animated one.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I really like that one. That one's a really interesting one. Again, I won't spoil it, but it's a fun animated one. And then they in a completely different animation style.
Oh yeah, there's that other one.
I'm forgetting the name of it, but that's a really, really nice one too.
The girl and the stars.
Yeah, it's a really, really good one. The thing about the short treks is my guess is that not everyone's going to like all of them. I certainly don't enjoy all of them equally. Some of them I find more enjoyable than others, but that's kind of the point. The point is that it's a space you can play around with a little bit. And I think it's a space where they can give new writers or more junior writers an opportunity to play a little bit, and they can try out different things that they can then build on and add into the series, just add to the lore a little bit. And in the case with The Trouble with Edward, they really get to try a 100% modernish comedy style. Now, the thing is, of course, a lot of people, this is a divisive episode of Short Treks because some people love it and some people can't stand this. Right. I am on the side that this is my favorite short trek. It's my most rewatched short trek, and I just love it. And I love it for all the crazy things that they do in it.
And it's got H. John Benjamin.
That adds to it a lot.
He totally works that role. That's totally made for him.
So just briefly for the plot summary, you have Captain Lucero, who's working, you know, on the Enterprise. She gets promoted to captain, and this is the Enterprise under Christopher Pike. So we also, in addition to H. John Benjamin and Rose Salazar as Captain Lucero, And she's mainly known for, I think, Alita Battle Angel. She's done a bunch, she's done other stuff as well, but I think that's kind of her marquee role. But we also get to see Anson Mount briefly as Captain Pike.
Totally.
Which is fucking awesome.
He does a captain's log. That's pretty hop happening.
And he's all being all captainy and mentory.
Yeah.
That's nice.
She's loving it.
She's loving it. I'm loving it too.
Yeah.
But Captain Lucero gets to take command of a science ship that is over a planet called Praegene 63, I think. I kept wanting to say Praline.
That sounds right, yeah.
Praegene 63.
Number something or other.
It's near Klingon space, just like Sherman's planet, and who knows? I really want to find out like this more about the Sherman's planet lore, because it looms so large in The Trouble with Tribbles and More Tribbles, More Troubles. And I as well as, there's a couple other ones where it looms large as well.
Is it mentioned in other episodes? Cause
I think it's mentioned in maybe Errand of Mercy, which is the one where the Organians first sort of prevent the Klingons and Federation from going to war. Cause I think that's the planet they're fighting over. Like they're going to go to war over it. So Captain Lucero, she's going to take over this ship. And I forget the name of the ship. If Dan was
the USS Cabot.
All right, good. You have it. Yeah, it's like Cabot cheddar cheese.
Yeah.
I should remember that.
Like Henry Cabot.
See, what we're missing with Dan out on his secret mission is that...
Northwest Passage.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Jesse's pulling up the slack for Dan, because I don't know what the star dates are.
I'm trying to. Oh, yeah, I don't know any of that.
I don't know
shit.
The star dates. I don't know the frequency number of the communications channel, any of that stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
But that's the stuff that Dan... That's the...
He knows. He gets the techno...
Techno. But anyway, so Lucero, she takes over this ship and she's dealing with a guy, Edward Larkin, who he's modifying.
Is like a science ship.
It's a science ship.
Strictly science. It's a bit smaller than the Enterprise.
Praegene 63 is suffering a famine crisis, right? Just like Sherman's planet is in More Tribbles, More Troubles. And so they are there to try to help the folks. And Edward Larkin... is a protein specialist, and he's had this idea that he presents to his new captain that he wants to modify the tribbles so that they can reproduce more quickly because they, as he put it, they're all meat.
It's all meat.
You shave them, they're all meat.
It's like a fuzzy scallop.
Yeah, he's like a scallop.
What did he say? It was like red or something.
Yeah, it's like blood red. Now, Captain Lucero tells him, no, don't worry about that. I'm going to retask you to a different thing.
some sort of climatology.
And in his bitterness, Edward continues the experiment, and he also tries to get Captain Lucero fired.
Yeah.
And horrible things result.
So he sends a message to, like, some kind of Starfleet, somebody higher up.
Yeah, whoever her like, commanding officer
she's
is.
She's dumb.
She's dumb. I understand why this is a divisive episode, because they go hard into the comedy. But again, comedy is nothing new to Star Trek. But this is almost like an office comedy setup.
Mm-hmm.
But for my money, what I really like is the combination of this real world scenario, which I think many of us have dealt with in, from one perspective or another, of a sort of a talented but obstinate weird person who is pushing back against the new boss. There's a disconnect there between their new boss and them. I like the combination of that, which is a really relatable storyline, with the complete absurdity of what actually ends up happening with Edward and the Tribbles, and especially because the performance, I think, 100% hinges on H. John Benjamin's delivery.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that sticks out to me is shortly after Captain Lucero takes command, and Edward Larkin is in the replimat, or whatever you want to call it, the cafeteria, and he's just leaning. First of all, this whole episode, he's always just leaning on stuff or sitting on stuff or lounging. He's like simultaneously about to explode into a rage, but he's all chill.
Except when he's like standing in the middle of the corridor, like in his underwear.
Yeah, right at the end is when he's. But even in the underwear, there's a mark of casualness there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know,
no, I'm not gonna do anything.
So he's standing in the cafeteria, or leaning against the thing, and the guy comes up. Is that Noel? It might even be Noel.
I think that is Noel. Yeah,
it is Noel. We'll get to the Noel thing in a second. The guy guy comes up, and Noel comes up, and he's ordering one large salad. And Ajon Benjamin's all like, you know, new boss. And she's all like, you know, he doesn't like her.
He's like, what do you think of the new captain? And he's like, I think people like her.
And he's like,
no, they don't.
Well, what he says is, this is what's brilliant about the delivery. What he says is, no. And then he stops. And then the salad comes out,
yeah.
And then Noel walks away, and then he's like, no, they don't.
Yeah, no, they don't.
There's a tremendous pause in between, which accentuates the awkwardness of this fellow, because again, you know, this is not an unusual person to encounter, somebody who is having some difficulty, again, with the new boss or just fitting in or whatever. They have got their own quirks. Everyone's got their own quirks, but it depends on the context you're in, and presumably, whoever his previous commanding officers were, they were willing to put up with him. He's obviously talented. I think that even Captain Lucero says that he's a talented person. I do think this is where some of the division comes in, because when this episode came out and I saw people reacting to it, most of the negative reaction was sort of this inability to comprehend that a person like this would be in Starfleet.
Oh no.
And that
they just wouldn't be on the Enterprise.
Exactly. That's what boggled my mind a little bit. And remember, this is pre-Lower Decks.
Right.
It's in some ways sort of laying the groundwork for Lower Decks by introducing the concept both of pure comedy in Star Trek, in the Star Trek context, as well as the concept of people who are not the A-team, Enterprise D, mm-hmm. Enterprise A, etc. They're not like the premier, top-of-the-line Starfleet people. But the reason it puzzled me was that not only do we know, I mean, that this is not the Enterprise, this is a science ship. We've seen tons of Starfleet officers and enlisted folk over the years who behave in foolish ways at all ranks. Yeah. And often they end up dead. I mean, Barclay is a good example.
I was going to say that, yeah, and he's even on the Enterprise.
He's on the Enterprise. He's a genius guy, really talented, but he also was doing something which I know in the 80s they played it for laughs. These days you wouldn't get away with a holodeck program where one of your colleagues, in this case Barclay, is creating holographic representations of you and playing around with you, and the heavy implication that there is sexual involvement. So it's basically like,
well, somebody, what else are you gonna do?
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's it's a whole nother debate about the morals of having sex with a simulacrum of somebody.
Play racquetball
on the holodeck. Yeah, or spring ball or whatever they come up with.
Pickleball.
Pickle bones. So this Edward Larkin is not the first problematic Starfleet officer that we've encountered, and we've encountered many of them. We just might not remember them because they are usually side characters. They're usually people who do make a mistake, or they have a bad attitude. Maybe they're a racist, right? You know, Kirk has that great line where he's like, keep your prejudice in your quarters. There's no place for it on the bridge. You know, there are all sorts of people who, arguably, if you only view the people who are in Starfleet as all being of the quality of character and technical and strategic capability of Captain Picard and Commander Riker. And by the way, you could argue they made plenty of mistakes themselves. They did some goofy stuff from time to time as well, right?
Yeah.
I don't find that a particularly convincing criticism.
Right.
If it bothers you,
it's just not realistic.
Yeah. If it bothers you, that's fine. I just think you got to watch more Star Trek and see that this is they're picking up on that, and now they're doing a story about that minor character who would normally be a 5-second line, and then he gets killed by, you know, the enemy because of his stupidity.
Think about, like, if you're good enough, you're an excellent Starfleet officer, and they assign you to the Enterprise because you're hot shit, or you're going places, and you're good, and so you do such a good job on the Enterprise that they give you your own command. But you're not on the Enterprise anymore, so you got to deal with you got to deal with some shit like Edward fucking Larkin. Like, these are the people you have to deal with, and not even that. There's all kinds of other bullshit you have to deal with because you're just not on the Enterprise anymore.
And that's often the case in a career where if you demonstrate a capability for, you know, organizing projects and leading people and stuff, you might in fact get sent to the group of people who have been underperforming because they are hoping to your leadership.
I hope you're gonna
will
something.
Bring them up. Now, in this case, they're portraying that most of the other scientists are up there. But, you know, I don't know, that Noel guy. I don't know about him. I didn't see him do much. So
I'm not even sure what his job was.
I really love, I think this is a very well-written episode. The comedic timing is good, both in terms of writing and the performances, particularly between Edward Larkin and Captain Lucero. The timing is great.
Yeah, it's really good.
So that's good.
Especially the scene where she calls him in and to tell him that he's, you know, essentially fired. He's been reassigned, and the whole thing about like how he keeps wanting to keep talking. Yeah. And she's like, no, this is over. He's like, well, conversation can't be over until somebody actually stops talking. That's, you know, he's cause like, it'd be rude. And
it's like talking to a child. And by the way, Captain Lucero is not without blame in this situation, or at least some small amount of blame. Because one criticism I heard people say, I agreed with the point they were making, I just didn't agree that it was a criticism. And what it was is they said that she came in, and when she didn't like his idea, she assigned him to a different area of science that was not his expertise, to climatology, right? And he protests and says, well, I'm a protein specialist. And she says, well, we're scientists here, that's what we're supposed to do. I agree, that was a mistake. She could have just kept him doing something, but not focusing on the tribbles.
He could have moved on to a different organism.
Precisely. Yeah. Or she could have decided to transfer him, you know, to something else where he could, you know, maybe he could do something. But the point being, I agree it was a command error for her to so blithely do that. And there was a little bit of, and I think this is intentional. This is my point. I think this is intentional that it was an error on her part to do that. It was an error on her part to be so chummy cozy with some of the other characters who she clearly was impressed with.
Yeah.
And they accentuate
that.
Yeah. They accentuate that she's doing that in the early part of this installment. And she's a young captain. She's a green captain. She's making some mistakes. They're only compounded because she has no way to understand the situation that this fellow Edward Larkin could potentially get them into because of his bitterness and sort of his ego being hurt a little bit by both her rejecting his plan and also reassigning him somewhat arbitrarily, it seems, to.
Yeah, I mean, because she like lost the ship. Like, there's like an inquiry afterwards.
They
like,
had to evacuate like, an entire planet.
There was a sit down with a board of admirals.
I understand people criticizing that. I think it's okay to criticize that. I just don't see that as a writing criticism. I don't see that as a plot criticism.
Right.
I see that as, you're supposed to understand that she's green and has made an error here and has contributed to this problem, but that she was not in any position to understand, nor was anybody else, how badly this could end up going.
He's already like, well, I don't have a department, it's just me. So he's already working by himself. Nobody's paying attention to this guy. They think he's a smart guy, but he's definitely weird, and everybody probably seems to kind of keep their distance or something. So he's totally just sneaking around, and he's like, well, you're going to do that? Well, I'm going to do this because I'm not dumb. You're dumb. I'm not dumb.
I really like the horror elements here. So
yeah,
it is a comedy, but one of the best scenes in here that stands out is when
in the turbo lift.
Well, there's the whole like, it starts with the whole singing Johnny Appleseed song.
Yeah, yeah.
And great. It's all lilting and, you know, fun and whimsical. And then as it's the song's going on, you're seeing sort of a montage of the tribbles replicating and popping around and people trying to deal with them. The music starts turning all sinister as it dawns on them that this has gone from being sort of a cute, mild aggravation to a life-threatening situation as the tribbles are somehow...
Because they're busting out the phaser rifles.
Yeah, they're busting out the phaser rifles.
They're going to town, and it's more like, it's much more... It seems much more of like a dangerous threat than the tone you get with the older episodes where it's like it's a lot lighter and goofier. Like you see that there's the woman that's on the turbo lift and it's filling up with tribbles and she's like screaming.
And then you
see like the side out in space. You like see that shot where they're looking into the ship. And you just see the ship just filling up with tribbles and everybody's just like, ah.
A brilliant shot because it's an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
And they convey that so well. And I already thought they did a pretty good job with that in The Trouble with Tribbles, but obviously we weren't seeing that level of you know,
because they had to make all those tribbles back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had to had a tribble farm.
Yeah,
I'm wondering if they used actual animal fur on the old ones. Probably not synthetic. I don't know what was cheaper back then.
Like those are like, I think we may have mentioned this. I may have mentioned this before, but you know, like people collect those, mm-hmm. and like they're like high value like auction items. And I mean, some of them were at the Smithsonian for the
I saw the
Star Trek thing. Majel Barrett owned a company that just happened to own a bunch of tribbles, and she'd, you know, rent them out or something.
Rent a tribble. And I'm sure you can purchase some really nicely made ones from Star Trek fans on Etsy or other places.
Oh, hell yeah.
So check it out. Give money to your Star Trek creatives. You don't need to give money to us.
No.
We got plenty from all that espionage.
We're making all this podcast money.
We're making shitloads of money on the podcast, but not from the listeners. We're making it from Big Star Trek, as we discussed in the past. Big Star Trek just funneling us, so we sell out to them. That's why we're giving all these positive reviews to all these shows. the horror element was really good right up into the end, but they balanced it so well with the comedy. And again, it's something that you could see, you could not maintain this for a 45-minute episode. You would have to do a different style. Maybe a chunk of it would be more comedic, but this is a story that does not work if you stretch it out. There's no need to, right? Or if you add an the A and B story, and this is not going to work so well. This works precisely in this format, which is why I'm a big fan of this format, that you can do stories like this. Now, it does appear that this episode retcons the idea of the tribbles replicating, because in The Trouble with Tribbles, I forget if it was just a supposition or if they actually knew it, but they talk about how they replicate so fast, and maybe they're just making some assumptions.
Yeah, they do mention the fact that they're already pregnant.
Yeah,
that was already, yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned that. So but it does seem to be a retcon to say that it was this Federation officer who made them reproduce that quickly.
Yeah. So the ones they have in the original series have the Larkin DNA already in them.
And the other thing, of course, that is maybe not a retcon, maybe you call it an inconsistency, is that this takes place when Captain Pike is the captain of the Enterprise. So it's definitely years before the situation Kirk and company encounter in The Trouble with Tribbles, but there appears to be no database information about Tribbles and stuff, but Larkin, there was a Latin name for it. I mean, you know, it was an identified creature. So I'm fine with that. You have to do this sometimes in Star Trek. I think another example that you can also see in this episode is they have one of the officers is a Trill officer. Right? Now, when we first met the Trill, not only did they not have the dots on their face, they had the weird forehead guy, you know, forehead stuff going on and having sex with
Beverly
when the Trill worm is in Riker, and the 80s were weird. The 80s and 90s were weird.
But they didn't know what was going on with the
Trill. And they didn't know who the Trill were, and they didn't know what the deal was. So they have since been like, you know what, that kind of doesn't make sense given the Trill live so long, and This is not to be
a major part of like Federation history.
Yeah, and this is not a new retcon with the Trill, because they did that already with Dax. Dax was implied that she was encountering people.
She was at the Kittimer Accords.
She was at the Kittimer Accords.
Or the Curzon.
She met McCoy and apparently had sex with him because she was talking about his clinical fingers or whatever.
Yeah.
Doctor's fingers.
So that was that Curzon Dax, or was that somebody before Curzon?
It was somebody before. Maybe it was Emini.
Perhaps it was a female.
Yeah, it was. I think it was Emini. I can't remember. We'll find out next week, because that's when she mentions that story.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we will learn that next week. What about the post-credits commercial? We have the story. We get to see... first, I suppose we should mention the scene that you touched on with Edward getting drowned in tribbles, screaming, "I'm not dumb."
Yeah. He's the only one that dies, right?
He's the only one who dies.
She's able, okay, so, you know, she loses the ship, but she gets everybody off.
She gets everybody off the ship except for him, because he refuses,
that dummy,
standing there in his underwear. The ship loses structural integrity, which we can, I'm guessing the Tribbles replicated to the point where it burst open. Ooh. That's the implication. Tribbles must have rained down onto the planet because
chicken sandwich and coffee.
The planet they were trying to save, they had to evacuate because it was an ecological disaster. The Tribbles took it over. They also mentioned that the Tribbles had gotten into Klingon space, which again, that starts, this is the real start, presumably, of the story of the Klingons having to deal with Tribbles, which is then continued later in The Trouble with Tribbles and More Tribbles, More Troubles, and that we learn significantly more details from Worf in Trials and Tribulations. Tribulations.
I haven't seen that episode, actually, so I'm looking forward to all the bits.
Trials and Tribulations is gonna be pretty fucking fantastic.
Completely sated.
Yeah, especially since you just saw The Trouble with Tribbles, because that's involved there. But this post-credits commercial is another thing that I think breaks some people. When I saw this, most short treks do not have a post-credit scene, so you don't expect this to happen. So you put on the old CBS All Access, now Paramount Plus, and you're watching this short trek and you're amused or you hate it or whatever, and then the credits roll, and then all of a sudden this VHS tracking symbol comes up and you see this weird 4x3 commercial that's completely fucking absurd. Did you see this, Jesse?
No, actually, you're blowing my mind right now. This is a podcast first.
All right, so we're going to have to see that. I guarantee you a million people did not even see this because, again, you don't expect a post-credit scene. And there's this commercial for Tribble cereal.
Oh, man.
I'll show it to you after the podcast, and the people at home will have seen it, so I don't need to ruin any of the jokes. But it's completely insane. And I know so many people who watch it. Even I, when I'm watching it, I'm like, what the fuck am I watching here? How does this fit into the Star Trek universe? I immediately decided I loved it because, again, it was taking a chance.
It sounds great.
And doing something completely ridiculous.
It's like Admiral Akbar cereal.
It's basically, it's like a Rick and Morty joke.
Yeah, totally.
But on a short trek. Totally. So,
like eye holes or whatever.
When we finish up here in a couple minutes, I'll play that for you and you'll enjoy that. But I do understand, more so than the rest of the episode, I understand if people see this and they're like, what the fuck is this? It doesn't make any sense. Especially because it has a VHS tracking signal, you know, tracking symbol or whatever. So back in the old days, you had VHS tape players and they were a magnetic tape on wheels, on like weird little wheels and a little piece of plastic. Little
wheels in there, and they would get all fucked up sometimes, and you had to get in there and straighten them out.
And there was a dial on your VCR where you could adjust the quote unquote tracking because the
like that did anything.
The little magnetic head that would read the signal off the tape. You know, the head was fine, but sometimes the tape would get a little misaligned, you know, and so you could adjust the tracking, you know, move the head up and down because otherwise the colors and sound might be weird. You know, growing up in the 1990s was a fucking chore.
We might have to explain tape to people.
Yeah. So.
I guess if you're old enough to know what we're talking about. You probably already know what we're talking about, but if you're not, then
For all I know, the hipster Generation Z people are all like into they're all hobbyists using VHS.
Oh yeah, some of those kids are into like a bunch of like vinyl and stuff.
Yeah, they're all like, yeah, let's watch this Nirvana concert on VHS.
Yeah, it's like you got to listen to this on just fucking vinyl. It's like, no, dude.
I think that does it for us in terms of discussing these two episodes. Any other odds and ends?
No, that's about it.
Word.
I liked it when he's talking about how he ate some. He ate a couple just for research purposes, and then he fed one to Noel.
Oh yeah,
Noel's a foodie.
I did want to mention that. I thanks for reminding me.
And Noel kind of like shook his head like, nah.
There's this whole, again, going back to, I meant to say this earlier, going back to the whole thing about how well written this is. That the main plot and everything, the characterization, the comedic timing, that's all very well written. But then they add in these fun little flourishes, like this weird thing that Edward has with Noel, because he keeps mentioning Noel. He keeps interacting with Noel.
He's the only other guy he interacts with.
Yeah, he's the only guy he interacts with. He talks about how he fed him a tribble, which implies that they're kind of friendly in some way. But on the other hand, he's all bitter when they're mad at him because they ask him, what DNA he used, and he says he used his own DNA.
Everybody right. just shakes their head and yeah. like they like move away from him.
Like. And then he's like, because the implication is that he jizzed into a tribble or something.
Yeah, right, right.
I doubt that's the process that was involved here.
But, probably not.
But yeah, this whole subplot where there's this friendship / antagonism with Noel, because yeah, they mentioned the DNA thing, and he's like, "What? Would Noel's DNA be any better?" And he's talking to Noel at the Replimat, and then he's talking about how he fed Noel a thing. Now Noel is totally selling him out at each time. Noel is always like, "I like the boss," and like in their original conversation around the conference table when he's saying he fed Noel a tribble, yeah. Noel's all like shaking his head,
yeah.
And you don't know what he's shaking his head to. Is he shaking his head to having eaten a tribble? Is he shaking his head to being referred to as a foodie?
Right.
Is he shaking his head sort of like in a generic, this guy?
You think maybe they were friends and they recently had a falling out, so Noel's just like, dude, get the fuck away from me.
Or it could be one of those things where Noel is like into hanging out with Edward, but he's not cool with other people knowing he's hanging out with Edward.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's kind of shitty. I know it happens. I know.
I just hang out with you because you have a bunch of weed.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it could be that Edward has he's a protein specialist, so maybe he can, whip up some genetic space weed, snake leaf. This is the finest snake leaf this side of Prejean 63.
He can make hallucinogenic tribbles.
I'd be down for that. I guess the final thought on this episode for me is I really wanted to eat a tribble. Ever since seeing this, I never thought of it before. I had never conceived of it.
He definitely talks it up.
I don't know if I'd like it or not, but I enjoy trying out different food stuff. I caused a bit of a stir the other day on Star Trek Twitter, because some people were having some prominent Star Trek Twitter people were having a discussion about beans on toast, and the British folks were of course defending beans on toast as they should, because I'm in the category of beans on toast being a good thing. They were defending beans on toast as good. Other people were arguing that it sounds gross, and I think one person was working up courage to go ahead and try it because they'd never tried it before. And somewhere along the line, someone said, well, I think they said they were from Iceland or something, and that they should be willing to try it because after all, they have the Icelandic shark. And then I responded and recounted an anecdote about how I once got to try the Icelandic rotted shark. And this was a colleague of mine in graduate school who worked at the Icelandic embassy, and she was in charge of, among other things, procuring the food stuff for an annual celebration that they hold at the Icelandic embassy in Washington, D.C., celebrating Icelandic heritage. And among the things they acquire is a goodly amount of the Icelandic rotted shark.
Oh, man.
And she brought a sample into class and offered us all a chance to try it. When she opened the bag, most people started almost puking.
Oh, yeah.
I was the only one that I recall. Maybe somebody else tried it, but I put my hand right up because I'm always about, I'll try something. I might not like it. I probably won't like it, but I'll try it.
That's good. You're a good sport.
It's seared into my memory.
I bet.
How horrifying this was.
Oh, man.
And so I basically recounted this anecdote on the Twitter, and I think it freaked a lot of people out. So for that, I apologize. But I do recommend it because I think there was some confusion. I did find it horrific, but I recommend, if you are offered it, if you're in Iceland or if you're around somebody who has some of this stuff, try it, because yes, it's awful. You will not like the flavor. It is a mixture of ammonia and sadness,
like,
and death
or something.
Yeah, there's lye, and the texture is what really gets to you, because the nearest thing, and this is not accurate, but the closest I can get is it's as if you're taking it just like biting into a big fat boil. Like that's the texture of where it's firm but squishy. And it sort of pops in your mouth.
Oh, no.
And it's not like it pops and liquid squeezes out. It's just like, it's really hard to describe.
It's not like a Gushers.
It's not a Gushers, but it's really, really, really bad.
Where is the Icelandic embassy anyway?
Somewhere along with the other ones. They're all scattered all around. Most of them on Massachusetts Avenue.
On okay.
But I don't. I can't remember if it's there because I didn't go there. She was. She brought it to the classroom. You know, elsewhere, it's which
just,
is all.
It's just over in that.
That particular university also happened to be near Massachusetts Avenue. But anyway, the point being that I like trying things, and I think. I can almost guarantee, in fact, I will step out on that ledge and guarantee that chowing down on some freshly grilled tribble would be better than the Icelandic shark. And I liked the experience of eating the Icelandic rotted shark. I did not like the taste or the feeling in my stomach. I liked the experience.
But it was, you were living.
I think the tribble. Would taste good.
It's got to be better.
I imagine
it's all meat. It's probably. I mean, well, he said it's like a big scallop. You think it? You know, it's a big. It's a big piece of. If it's a big scallop, it's a big piece of seafood. So it could be like a big piece of lobster, like a big piece of white fish or something. Something like that. You know, you
hairy fish, hairy meat.
You saute it a little bit, a little blackened.
And unlike fish, it doesn't have a face.
Put on some kale.
No face.
Oh, no face at all.
He was all talking about, Edward was like, well, they don't have as you can see, they have no face.
Like any other mollusk doesn't have a face.
I do like that Edward was confused when she was asking if they were intelligent. And he was like, I think even if they are intelligent, they'll still be easy to catch.
Yeah, right. It's like well, one fell off of my desk and it just died.
It's like, so there's that.
It's like, oh, well, I can genetically engineer them to be brain damaged. Everybody's just like, oh.
But what's great about that, what is great about even that line that's played for a joke is it presents such an interesting moral question that people are actually wrestling with today in a sense with, for example, the lab-grown meat, right? Now, the lab-grown meat's a little bit further removed, but before that technology came online, there was a lot of talk about genetically engineering cows with no brain, basically, with just a brain stem. So the idea would be that you could grow cows that do not feel pain, have no rationality or anything. So in theory...
And no bovine encephalitis.
Honestly, you know, I don't know about the bovine encephalitis.
I guess you could still have it.
You could probably get it if it's spinal cord and brain stem. You get a little chunk of brain there. But anyway, so that was a discussion that was had and may in fact be ongoing about a potential solution to, I guess, vegetarians. I don't know. I don't think we need a solution for vegetarians. I think more of us should be vegetarians.
I thought they were the solution.
Yeah. Vegetarians and vegans are in fact the solution to the majority of our environmental and health problems.
Totally.
And I one day I'd be great if I can get there.
I'm working there. It's hard.
I don't quite have the fortitude yet because of pigs. Pigs are so fucking good. I try to eat a lot less beef.
That's easy.
I like beef. Go back to the old days where beef was a once in a while kind of thing.
It's even easier to not eat chicken, but like, you know, you gotta have some pig every now and then.
It's an addictive thing. Yeah. And I recognize that. It's the umami in the pig. And it's quite possible the tribbles have a similar level of umami deliciousness, but I don't know. We won't find out yet. Hopefully in the future, when genetic engineering gets a little bit better, lab the
golden
meat,
age of science,
they will start, they're going to start with producing fake hamburgers and fake pork and all that other stuff. That's great. I'm looking forward to the next generation of it. Fake. when they start making invented foods like tribbles and, you know, what's a creature you'd want to eat? Like an imaginary
dragon,
dragon. That's a good one. Like you can get some dragon meat.
Wyvern.
You invent some dragon meat, some harpy meat.
Wyvern saute. Fricassee wyvern.
You could get you could genetically engineer something that looks like Kermit the Frog. If you're one of those types who wants to eat Kermit the Frog. I'm not one of those types.
Or Gonzo.
Gonzo I might eat. I'd like to eat Gonzo's nose.
Or Zoot.
Fried up. I think Gonzo's nose fried up might be good. But anyway.
Or animal, whatever the hell that kind of creature is.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind eating animal, except I'd really like, I want to hang out with animal.
Yeah, you don't want to eat him. He's your buddy.
Or I want to hang out with that band of stoners.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they always have that band of stoners.
The band that animal's in.
The band that animal's in. Like, they're all like...
Janice and Floyd.
They're the kind of people who, even back in the 70s, had the good weed.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, most people had the sort of ditch weed.
Yeah, they had like Maui Wowie.
But they had... they had that early, you know, hydroponic stuff when people were starting to figure out how to
Acapulco
do shit.
Acapulco gold.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that'll do it for us this evening. And as a reminder, next week, we will be discussing Trials and Tribulations, which is Deep Space Nine. I've had a little bit too much of this Scotch whiskey that I was gifted for Christmas, so I can't remember the season or episode number. I can't remember it, so you guys go look it up. Trials and Tribulations. You'll find it. It's on Paramount Plus, Netflix.
Deep Space Nine. It's a later
Amazon.
Later season.
I think it's season 6.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're really looking forward to that to conclude our Tribble Mania, 3 weeks of Tribble Mania. It's a fun episode. Jesse hasn't seen it yet. So he's looking forward to
triple
it.
Triple Tribbles.
In the meantime, that's what Dan would have said if he was here. In the meantime, you can reach us in a variety of ways. I'm going to put Jesse on the spot here. What is our email address, Jesse? For those weirdos who want to send an email instead of contacting us on social media, which is both more fun and can lead to more conversations and is better to help spread the word about this particular show. But for those small number of weird people who would like to send us an email, where do they send that email?
That's a good question. That is a good question. It's I have no idea.
It's feedback and it's
oh,
got Star
fuck. Trek. God damn it.
It's
every
all right.
time.
You know, Jesse does have email. He doesn't have Twitter, but he does indeed have
email. I do have email, but I don't email. I don't need to give any feedback because I'm already, you know, I'm on the other end of it.
If you want to send Jesse an email, send something to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. I will forward it to Jesse.
Totally.
And then he will handwrite on some vellum
a
response.
I'll bust out my my sheepskin and then I'll take it down to the notary and he will put it on the interweb.
Yes, it'll all be taken care of. So feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. obviously you can infer from that our website is itsgotstartrek.com, in which you can find not only all our podcast stuff, but also you can sort by series. So if there's episodes that you want to listen to from TNG or Deep Space Nine, you know, we've got podcast episodes covering all the Star Trek series. We've got some other topics as well. So you can check those out on the website. Social media. This is the big one. You can find us at It's Got Star Trek. Yes, exactly. At It's Got Star Trek. Pretty much on any relevant social media. I mean, we're not on TikTok yet because I don't know. I just don't know.
Because we're in our 40s.
Yeah. But on Twitter, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, at It's Got Star Trek.
We are not on MySpace.
We're not on MySpace at the moment.
I don't know if anybody is.
It might. I hear it's going to make a comeback.
That's awesome.
But I'm putting my money on Friendster. But so if you want to join us there, Twitter in particular, we get into all sorts of fun conversations. So give us a follow and let us know you followed us and we'll say hi and joke around with you. It'll be a fun time. I think that's mostly everything. Oh, yeah. YouTube. We put all our stuff up on YouTube.
Totally.
So if you want to check out things on YouTube.
Clickety-click.
What would be fantastic, if it wouldn't bother you too much, is for you to subscribe to us on YouTube. Or if you want to leave a review, that'd be fantastic. We've had contests in the past, give away some prizes, and I think we're planning to probably do something like that again soon, which I shouldn't have said because it's now going to dissuade you from doing a review now, and instead you're going to save it because you want to enter the contest. But, you know, you can always write another review or you can subscribe to something else. But that's helpful.
How about if listen to multiple podcasts simultaneously on through different windows, YouTube windows?
Yeah. You could do that as well.
And then give us feedback on what you think about.
Yeah. Ideally, you start this podcast all at the same time.
Find out which podcasts sort of go together with other podcasts simultaneously. And maybe, you know, it'll sound like an interesting conversation with six people talking.
It'll sound like that.
It'll sound like it.
And otherwise.
Don't do that.
Otherwise, we wish you all the best for the week ahead. And we'll be seeing you.
Maybe this week will be better than last week.
You'll be hearing from us, I should say. Next Saturday, Trials and Tribulations. It's going to be a fun one. All right. Have a good night.
Good night.
Aren't you going to sit down, sir?
I think I'll stand.